The world of sports media has become dry, boring, and predictable. That's why we created the Free For All Sports Podcast, starring Greg Reynolds, Joel Raggett, and Steve Bigg. Nothing personal, it's only sports.
Welcome back to the Free For All Sports Podcast. It is the best time of year for sports. We got the MLB World Series going on, NFL is in full swing, hockey is starting to get rolling, and basketball is right around the corner. So let's get right into it. Greg Reynolds joins us as always, and unfortunately, so does Joel Raggett. My name is Stephen Bigg, and guys, I want to start off with the hottest topic right now, the Major League Baseball World Series. I was sitting down looking at the matchup, classic matchup between the Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals, and it just sort of dawned on me, the St. Louis Cardinals took a lot of heat for letting the best hitter in baseball walk. Albert Pujols, two World Series rings. Everybody, I'm sure Cardinals fans were certainly hoping that he was going to be a St. Louis Cardinal for life. They made the decision not to trade him, but to just let him walk. And you know what? Here they are back in the World Series. I bet you Albert Pujols is really wishing maybe that he had, you know, taken the money that St. Louis was offering him and gotten a shot at another ring. Doesn't this sort of put in perspective just how ridiculous contracts are in baseball when you've got a guy that's turning 30 and, yeah, maybe still has a little bit of gas left in the tank, but he's looking at a 10-year contract. Man, do the St. Louis Cardinals ever look smart for letting him walk. Greg?
The St. Louis Cardinals are one of, if not the smartest organizations in baseball, if not all of sports. What they've done over their history is build smart franchises, build smart teams through drafts. They don't need to sign the big free agent. I mean, I remember when they won the World Series, what was it, 3 years ago now? 2 years ago now? And you couldn't name a starter on their roster. They had guys like David Freese stepping up. And you're thinking to yourself, who the hell is David Freese? Guy wins the MVP. You have no idea who this guy is, but that's what the St. Louis Cardinals do. Nobody knew who Albert Pujols was until he made it big with St. Louis. And then you know what St. Louis said? You want better money? Go take it. But we have a winning formula here, and you're not going to win in L.A. We can promise you that. So take the higher contract. What do we care? And now L.A. is sitting there. They have the seventh highest payroll in the league, and they're not winning. In fact, they're not even coming close to making the playoffs. And, Steve, I know you were down on the Cardinals this year. Going into the season, you thought, you know what, it's not their time anymore. But what this is showing is if you can put together a good farm system, you're always going to be in it. And that's what the Yankees used to do until they started spending all their money and trading away all their farm system players, and now they're screwed. Highest payroll, don't make the playoffs. The Dodgers gave away their farm system, and they've spent a bunch of money, and they're going to be screwed too. The problem is when you trade away your farm, you've got nothing to fall back on if these free agents don't pan out, which they often don't.
It also goes to show that good hitters in the MLB seem to be a dime a dozen. Like, there's always going to be another one coming down the pipe, and the smart teams are the ones that put the real focus on pitching. If you're going to try to lock up a guy, and you know what, the thing with pitchers is their shelf life's really short, too. These long contracts in baseball, I mean, how many guys really have that type of tenure in baseball? So doling out these monstrous long contracts is, it's almost ridiculous because, as Pujols has shown, you can turn the lights out almost instantaneously and have your career nearly end. I mean, the guy's obviously still a very, very good baseball player, but nowhere near what he was doing in St. Louis. And it just goes to show exactly what a premium pitching is because, I mean, that's always been the staple of what's made St. Louis Cardinal teams so good.
So Max Scherzer is commanding about $300 million going into this offseason. Do you sign him or do you let him go?
But $300 million is his asking price. If all these teams should, what they ought to do is show a little collusion and say, well, how about we go 5 years at $125 million? Because 5 years, the guy has been great for three. Can we say, has it been three in a, definitely two in a row. Has it been three?
I don't even know if it's been three. I would say two and a half.
Yeah, about that. I'd agree with that.
Well, then offer him. Do you honestly think he's going to be really good for even 3 more years? You pay a guy as long as you think he's going to keep playing at that type of salary level. And the unfortunate thing in baseball is there are no buyouts. There's no mulligans for those really albatross contracts. And the worst thing is that somebody's going to get stuck picking up the tab.
Yeah, but again, in baseball, you don't have the salary cap to worry about. So if you're a team with bottomless pockets, or even not necessarily even bottomless pockets, but deep pockets, then, you know, eating a bad contract or two isn't the end of the universe. And you look at what Tim Lincecum just got to re-up in San Francisco for 2 years. He got $17 million per. And let's be honest, Tim Lincecum is a shadow of his former self. Just goes to show you what a premium pitching is at. So I think Scherzer is going to get whatever he's asking for.
I think if I were a young athlete, I would bypass football, bypass basketball, go straight to baseball. Because you don't even have to be good anymore. And you are going to be a multi-millionaire. And you'll be around for forever. I mean, injuries in baseball rarely ever happen. You can get injured in basketball. You're definitely going to get injured in football. Baseball, you kind of hang out all summer in the sun. Nobody really watches until the playoffs. And it doesn't really matter how good you are. You can pitch for one inning and get about $15 million a season. Baseball is getting a little bit ridiculous with their contracts. But, hey, if they're going to pay the money, I would suggest every young kid out there, forget football, start playing baseball.
I want to take issue, actually, with the idea that these deep pocket teams don't care about just doling out and writing off all this money. I mean, these guys, these owners, got to that point by being shrewd and very intelligent businessmen. That's how they got to the position they were. So I think eating like a $25 million contract, I think it's got to eat at them a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, why? How can such a brilliant business guy just go, you know what, if it doesn't work out, I mean, we're going to lose $100 million. They can't say that. They can't. There's no chance.
Sure they can. It's all about risk-reward. You pay the contract because there is a huge reward at the end. You sign Albert Pujols because you know he could go down as the greatest hitter in the history of baseball. At the time when they signed him, that was being talked about for forever. Big, I know you're a big Albert Pujols guy, or you were. And you made the case 4 or 5 years ago that Albert Pujols could go down as the best hitter of all time. So, of course, L.A. is going to go risk-reward. Well, if it pans out, great. But if not, you know what? We took the risk, and we're going to pay the consequences. But at least we took the risk. Because winning in Major League Baseball, that's why you buy a team. Because you want to win. So you'll do whatever it takes.
The one contract that really sticks out to me is the New York Yankees a couple of years paying Carl Pavano the ridiculous money. I can't remember exactly what the dollar figure was, but it was astronomical for a pitcher like Carl Pavano. And when Pavano turned out to be completely awful and they basically cut him after about 3 starts, the general feeling sort of seemed to be, big deal. We took a shot. He's not working out. We'll pay his salary and we'll move on. So I think there are certain teams that really, I mean, the Dodgers are paying Ted Lilly $11.5 million a year. he wasn't even on their roster in the second half of the year because they basically said, you know what, stay home. We don't need to be paying. We'll pay your salary, but we don't want you on our pitching staff. I think there are certain franchises in baseball where, yeah, $1.5 million here, $15 million there, it really isn't that big of a deal to them.
And Big, was it you that was telling me that Bobby Bonilla is one of the highest paid outfielders not playing for the New York Mets this year? Somebody was telling me they're still paying Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah,
the New York Mets are.
Yep.
Here's the breakdown on the Bonilla thing. The trivia question at the beginning of the year was, who are the top 2 paid outfielders for the New York Mets? They were Jason Bay, who no longer plays for them. I think he spent the year in Seattle, did he not?
Yeah.
And Bobby Bonilla was the second highest paid. Bobby Bonilla is making $1 million a year through 2025 or something stupid like that. The contract kicked in 2000, pays him $1 million a year for the next 25 years. He hasn't played a major league game in over 15 years.
But it's going straight to the Betty Ford Clinic to help with his issues. So really, he's not seeing a dime of that money.
Oh, he's seeing a dime. Betty Ford's not that expensive. the New York Yankees payroll is about $228 million, right, just for this season. Do you really think they care if they have to cut $10 million of that just because the guy didn't work out?
I think you have to.
Why?
Honestly, you have to, don't you? These guys
from 228 million, 10 million is chump change.
It comes down to whether you're Walter White or Jesse Pinkman. Isn't 10 of 228 breakage?
Well, it's
exactly right.
It turns out to be spillage. It's like being a bartender, but wow. I mean, could you imagine just lighting your cigars with $10 million? That's essentially what they're doing. It's just, it's mind-boggling that that's even, you know, we're going to take this kind of a risk at that type of loss. It's just unfathomable.
I take issue with that. If Carl Pavano's pitching, nobody's lighting any cigars.
Before we get to our World Series predictions, I just want to point out a quick fuck you to the Toronto Blue Jays. Their manager that they decided to let go and a catcher that they decided to let go are playing in the World Series. So, I mean, they've got a really good organization there in Toronto and really high payroll, big expectations, and they didn't even come close to making the playoffs. They're never, ever going to relive their glory days, no matter how many times they put Joe Carter on TSN radio and replay that goddamn 93 World Series. They're not going to relive the glory days, and it's so sad to watch them try, and I'm so happy that John Farrell got out of there and that Mike Napoli got out of there and that all these former Jays are going on to bigger and better success than dwindling away in Toronto.
You just had to get your Jays shot in there, didn't you, Greg?
Always. My thing.
Lay it on us then, superstar. Who's your World Series pick?
Everybody's talking about this series going 7, and oh, these teams are so close. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe it. I find more often than not when they say there's no difference between the two teams, it's a sweep. And if we're going sweep one way or the other, I'm going Boston sweep. 4-0 Boston.
I think the Cardinals can steal a game or two, but Boston obviously is the stronger team. They've got it all. They got the pitching. They got a bullpen that right now is on fire. And when you get guys like David Ortiz, and you know, I think one thing that the media sort of hypes it up, the whole beard thing with Boston. You know what? There's really something to that, especially in baseball with the superstition thing. When you get guys buying into something, I'll put it this way. Beards is way better than fried chicken and beer in the locker room, which if anybody forgets, a year ago this time, we were talking about what a mess the Red Sox are. It's done a complete 180, and I don't think this team can be beat.
I like Boston as well. I'm going to take Boston to win in 5. I hate small ball. I hate it with a passion, and any time I've ever watched St. Louis play, all I see is small ball. I see.
Why do you hate small ball?
Pitching. Small ball sucks. It's dull. I mean, I love to watch guys run the base pass, but single after single after single after single is the boringest baseball of all time to watch, and I hate it, and that's why I hate the St. Louis Blues, or St. Louis Cardinals, excuse me. I hate the Blues, too. But we want to know who you think is going to win the World Series, and you can send us your tweets. Give us a little explanation as to why as well, and you can tweet us at FFA Sports on Twitter.
Now, Gino, don't bother tweeting because, Gino, we know you're going to pick the Red Sox. We already know it's there.
I want to talk about the NFL and this rash of injuries, not just actually in the NFL, but also in hockey. There have been a rash of injuries in the last week and a half. And in the NFL in particular, throughout this entire season, we have seen guys go down one after another. It's like they're getting sniper fire from the upper deck. The latest ones to go down, done for the season. Sam Bradford's gone. Reggie Wayne is gone. Help me out, guys, if you can think of any other guys that have...
Jay Cutler, Doug Martin, Brian Cushing again.
It's just one after another. And the explanation that everybody is coming out with is bigger, faster, stronger. Well, the thing is that everybody's bigger, faster, and stronger. They're coming out with new equipment to try to help guys. They're coming out with new rules to try to protect players. The issue is with the players themselves. Here's the thing. I was listening to a recent episode of the Jim Rome Show. He had a particular defensive player on who, I can't remember who it was now, but during one of the Madden NFL commercials, this defensive player got trucked. He actually got run over by the running back in the commercial. It's a video game. And this guy said, no, no, if I had my way, it wouldn't have actually, that they wouldn't have had that on the commercial, and payback's going to be coming this season to anyone who comes my way, trying to prove that this guy isn't going to get run over again. So what he's going to do is intentionally either throw dirty hits or try to hit harder instead of making the tackle. It's not a hit, it's a tackle. It's like in hockey. You're not trying to kill the guy. You're trying to bump him off the puck and take it from him. It starts with the players. And these guys, guys like Brandon Merriweather that are targeting players and are intentionally trying to make the highlight reel, they're the problem. It's not that these guys are getting bigger because everybody's bigger. It's guys trying to make the highlight reel and trying to keep their hitting at 99 on NHL 14 or whatever. And these players have to become more accountable or else they just have to take these ridiculously dangerous hits out of these sports.
Well, I agree with you to a point, but at the same time, if you look at the injuries from this weekend, especially in the NFL, I mean, Brian Cushing's was because of a bad hit by Jamal Charles. They had a tweet and said, my bad, and Brian Cushing said, no problem. But Reggie Wayne wasn't a hit, just unfortunate. Jay Cutler's was a sack. It was nothing different than a normal sack you'd see. Sam Bradford was running out of bounds. Like, none of these were massive hits or anybody trying to decapitate anybody else, and it was just unfortunate. And it's hilarious because there are so many injuries every single week in the NFL, every single week in sports. But when it's big names that go down, like Jay Cutler, Sam Bradford, Doug Martin, Reggie Wayne, that's when we take notice. That's when we start to say, whoa, hold on here. Things are getting dangerous. With the practice squad guys that got hurt 3-4 weeks ago are like, well, that happened to me. My ACL's torn. But we pay more attention to it when the stars go down. And I don't think it's getting any more vicious. In fact, I think things are getting better than 3-4 years ago, especially in the NFL, when it comes to dirty hits, minus a few players, but we'll get to that a little bit later. And I think in the NHL, I think it's the fact that these guys, they had a bit of a shorter offseason than they did last year.
Not the Flames. They had a long offseason.
Well, but, I mean, think about last season. It was a lockout-shortened season, so for an extra 3-4 months, these guys got to sit back and relax, right? And now they got to get back out there, and they had spring training again, and they had all the things that they're not used to. So I think their bodies have to get back in an 82-game shape.
There were a lot of injuries coming out of training camp in the NFL this year. And what's-his-face there? Freeman went down in practice again. What are they doing or not doing? Does it have something to do with the field turf or something like that? Like, there just seems to be – does there not seem – you don't think there's more injuries? I don't think I've ever seen – this many, I mean, you're constantly seeing stoppages. Every time I flip over to another football game on Sunday, somebody's on the field being attended to. It seems to me, from what I've watched, that there are more injuries. And as far as, I mean, concussions are one thing that, a concussion is always evidence of a dirty hit. You can't get a concussion from a clean hit, unless you're the running back that's a moron and dropped your head. But even that, they've changed the rules too as well. So the rash of concussions that are going on, and granted, they're also diagnosing them a lot better now. I don't know. To my eye, it just seems like there are so many more injuries now, and whether everybody's just being overly cautious or what, I can't say because I haven't crunched the numbers yet. But to my eye, it seems like there is such a lack of respect between players, and everybody's just trying to make the highlight film.
I think it's just a bad year. I think it sort of goes back to what Greg was saying. I mean, yeah, we notice it more because it's the stars that are going out. I mean, coming from a guy who's watched all the Falcons games this year, you look at the injuries from those games. Miami lost Cam Wake. New England lost Vince Wilfork. Tampa Bay lost Doug Martin. That's not even starting on the injuries Atlanta has. These are big guys that are going down, and it's not every year that that happens. It just seems to be a bad year. But I want to address hockey a little bit. And Joel, you sort of touched on something that I felt needed to be included in the concussion debate when you're talking about hockey. And it's the idea of, what is the purpose of being physical out there? you're right. It's to move guys off of the puck. It's to gain an edge that way. It's not about railroading a guy. It's not about hitting a guy just because he's out there. But that seems to sort of be the culture that hockey, from the NHL on down, all the way to the lowest ranks of junior, has sort of developed in their head that, yeah, it's about turning the momentum with a big hit, and it's about making the highlight reel, and it's about cleaning a guy's clock whenever you get the chance. If he's got his head down, oh, he's fair game. You better make him pay. And that's what needs to be run out of hockey if they're going to get rid of the concussion problem. It needs to go back to the way it was years ago when, yes, it was a physical game, and yes, guys got hit, and yes, guys got hurt, but it wasn't needless violence. You know, it was physicality for a purpose. And I agree with Greg in the sense that the NFL has put rules in place and gotten a lot better with sort of controlling this. I think the NFL thing is it's just a bad year and the stars are getting hurt. But certainly the NHL needs a culture change where they say, you know what? It's not about cleaning a guy's clock just for the hell of it. It's about, do you have the puck? No. Can you get the puck? Yes. What do you have to do physically to get the puck within reason?
You're wrong there. I'm sorry, man, but I don't know. Did you ever play hockey and have the amazing feeling from your bench reacting and the crowd reacting when you just leveled some guy? It is the best, and it can turn a whole game around. You watch the playoffs. It's never more evident in the NHL than in the playoffs. If a guy gets leveled on a clean hit, open ice on the boards, it can totally swing the momentum towards your team. Everybody gets jacked up. Everybody gets excited. The only difference is now guys are doing it in a dirty way. They're hitting from behind. They're sticking their chicken wing out into guys' heads as they're going through the ice. That's where you're seeing the concussions. The clean open ice hits, they're not causing the concussions. Those have been around for forever. And think about a guy like Dion Phaneuf. He wouldn't be in the NHL if it weren't for hits like that. The only reason that guy has a tape is because of hits like that.
I don't think you can definitively say that it's not the clean hits that are causing concussions. Evidence has shown that concussions can be caused by just about any kind of bump to the head, whether it's clean or not. So you want to get concussions out, get guys to think twice before they hit somebody.
But
don't just hit a guy for the hell of it.
Steve, it's shoulder to chest. That's how the hit goes. You're not hitting a guy's head.
The Scott Stevens hit on Paul Kariya, was that clean? It absolutely was. There was nothing illegal about that hit. The Scott Stevens hit on Eric Lindros was clean. But the issue is, it makes you ask the question, is there a need for a quote-unquote defenseless receiver rule in the NHL? If a guy's outstretched and there's a different play that can be made, or you can take the man out without actually trying to kill him, is that something that needs to be implemented? I mean, think about it. If you've got a guy and you can take him, and I don't even know how to describe taking him out. You grab him or you pin him, because I mean, there have been games when I played that I could have just absolutely leveled a guy, but most of the time they were a lot smaller than me, or they were. I remember playing some games when it was a girl, and you just didn't. You didn't. You could have, but you didn't, because there's got to be a sense of nobility in the game. And one thing I got to address as well, Greg, is that I don't think the big hit is the biggest momentum shift. I don't. I think a big save can have the exact same effect. I think a shift like what I saw Lance Boma have the other game, where he was blocked like four shots in the same kill, that was as big a boost you get from the crowd. I don't think the big hit is the one and only thing to pump up your team the most. I don't agree with that.
Well, I didn't say it was the only one, but it's something that can shift it. And you know what? If you can go out there, and that's why everybody loves Jerome McGinley, is because when the Flames did make the playoffs, he would go out there, and if the Flames weren't having a good game, he would drop the gloves and fight. So everybody on his team would stand up, take notice, and be like, you know what? Our captain is throwing his body on the line, and we have to win this game.
I've always felt the Iginla fighting thing was kind of overblown a bit. I really don't think that Iginla fighting somebody had that big of an effect on the momentum of the game. I think guys
absolutely
have to find
it did.
Ugh. I don't know how you can say that, yet when we had the conversation about the Super Bowl last year, oh, a 45-minute power outage delay, that doesn't affect momentum at all. I don't get how you can say, yeah, hitting a guy, everybody stands up and takes notice, but sitting around for 45 minutes, that doesn't make a difference. Nobody notices that.
Because both teams sat around.
Yeah, but it still affects the team that's up by 21 points or whatever the hell it was. Does it not? The team that feels the game is over, does that not affect them adversely?
No, not at all. If both captains won the fight, then both teams would be jacked up. But one captain went out there and won the fight. Or one guy went out there and threw a big hit for his team. They're completely opposite scenarios.
You can't tell me that Jerome Iginla won every single one of those fights.
No, but to his team, having your captain, who's your goal scorer and your leader, go out there and drop the gloves, which shouldn't even happen. That should be a guy who plays 3 minutes a game. When he goes out there and does that?
So he doesn't necessarily have to win the fight. It's just the action of fighting that turns the tide?
When it's a player for your team that you respect like that, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Agree to disagree.
Now, the one thing that needs to happen in both hockey and the NFL is the leagues need to actually make a commitment to make the game safer. Right now, they say they're doing it. Right now, they've got Brendan Shanahan. Right now, they've got Roger Goodell saying, oh, you know what, we want to get head injuries out of the game. But Brendan Shanahan is soft. Brendan Shanahan will take a repeat offender like Patrick Coletta and suspend him 5 games. You know what Patrick Coletta needs? A full season. That's going to get the message through to this guy. 5 games to Patrick Coletta is a vacation. Same with Brandon Merriweather in the NFL. They just suspended him 2 games because, once again, he was headhunting this past weekend. And you know what? He threw his helmet into 2 different receivers, which he'd already done this season, knocked out a guy and knocked out himself. He gets a fine. Not suspended. Keeps playing. Does it a couple games later, and they say, you know what, Brandon Merriweather, and the NFL doesn't suspend guys because it's a short season, but they said, you know what, Brandon Merriweather, you're out 2 games. Well, then he appeals, and they reduce it to 1 game. So what are they essentially saying to Brandon Merriweather? Nothing. Keep doing it. We'll give you a week off. You're probably injured anyways. We'll give you a week off without pay. Well, what are you losing, $100,000? To Brandon Merriweather, he doesn't care. He's not going to change the way he plays, and he already said that he's not going to change the way he plays. You know how you have to get through to these guys to make the game safer? Actually give them a penalty that they care about. If you suspend Brandon Merriweather until next season, he's going to get it. If you suspend Patrick Coletta for the rest of the season, he's going to get it. But 1-2 games, they don't care.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, every media outlet and water cooler conversation in the country has gone over it millions and millions of times by now about the absurdity, particularly of the NHL's disciplinary structure. And everybody thought that was going to change when they brought Shanahan in. And you know what? For the first 1 or 2 suspensions, I seem to remember it sort of did look like he meant business. But you're right. It's right back to the old wheel of justice in the NHL. And the NFL is not a whole ton different, like you just mentioned. But the problem is, and the problem will always be, is that if they try suspending guys for entire years and stuff like that, then the players' union immediately jumps in and turns it into a big shit fit and turns it into this big feces-throwing match with the league saying, oh, you can't suspend our union members for an entire year and they lose all this salary and all that. And that is the problem. I honestly think that a guy like Shanahan wants to bring the hammer down a little harder, but he's restricted in a lot of ways.
I find it a little
ironic.
Well,
then fight for it.
I find it a little ironic that a guy who was nailed for PEDs, Von Miller, got 6 games, which may have been just a simple prescription mix-up. I'm not entirely that well-versed on the way that whole case went down, whereas a guy like Merriweather, who has the potential to have ended 2 guys' careers, gets 2 games. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And how that type of discipline is doled out, I just don't get it. And there's no show transparency. They're not trying to explain it to us. Merriweather is a recidivist. He does this constantly. And when his suspension's over after what's now one game, he's going to do it again. So, like Greg said, and you both have said, how do you fix it? You got to just go, okay, you know what? Enough. Enough is enough. You're done. And now you're going to have to support your 9 kids with no check or go play somewhere else. Figure it out. And maybe the people involved in his life will actually sit down and go, okay, you know, we're starving here because you play football like an idiot when you're actually a really good player and you have the ability to play really well, but you're costing us now. So maybe that would finally get something through.
They suspend Sean Payton for an entire season because of Bountygate, because he allowed Greg Williams to run a defense that was headhunting. Well, you know who else is headhunting? Brandon Merriweather. But they have no problem with letting him play in 2 weeks. And you know what? If you're going to have a fight on your hands, then fight. If you want to come out every single week, every single year and say, boy, we are really committed to player safety, then fight for it. When the NFL union comes back at you and says, you can't suspend our player for a full season, say, yes, I can. These are the rules that the players must live by. Here are the incidences that happened just this season. Oh, and by the way, here's the audio of your client going into the dressing room saying, I'm not going to change the way I play, and going around to his teammates and asking for donations to his fine fund. It's disgusting. And if you're not going to fight for it with the players' union, then you're never going to make the game safer.
They ought to show Merriweather the autopsy of Dave Duerson's brain, or one of these ex-NFLers that had obvious brain trauma, eventually took their own life because of depression issues brought on by constant concussions. Maybe that might get the message through.
I don't think it will. I think that's the problem, is I think that most of these guys, that's just not an option. They're never going to see it that way. And I think that's the point that Greg is trying to make, is that, yeah, if they really cared, put your money where your mouth is and get something done about it. But they don't care. That book that just came out about the NFL, the League of Denial, about the settlement with all its former players dealing with the brain injuries and the settlement, part of the agreement of that settlement was that the NFL would agree to pay all of these damages. However, they would not admit culpability. They would not come out and say, yes, it was football that caused this. They basically probably paid extra than they were willing to in order to be able to say, guess what? We're not responsible for this. And that's the problem. It starts with the league. You're not going to teach these players, oh, hey, guess what? Your retirement might not be as enjoyable as you want it to be. It has to come from the league. And the NFL certainly, I don't think in our lifetime it's ever going to get to that point unless you start seeing players dropping dead on the field of play.
And sadly, you know what? That is something that's not too far in the future. I mean, you look at something that happened to JaMychal Finley over the weekend. The guy has a bruised spinal cord. Eric LeGrand, former Rutgers player, now in a wheelchair, going speaking everywhere about the dangers of football. He was a special teams guy. You know what? In 10, 15 years, when there is no more NFL because all their players are injured and can't walk anymore, they're going to look back at times like this and be like, you know what? I wish we fought harder to change the game while we still had a chance. We want to know how many games you would have given to Brandon Merriweather. You can tweet it in, one game, two games, a full season, or shut up, guys, just let him play. Tweet it in to @FFASports.
You're listening to the Free For All Sports Podcast. Nothing personal, it's only sports.
And finally, we get to tell some people in a very Canadian way to shove it, or take off, you hoser. And today, I'm going to tell Toby Sheldon to take off. You hoser. You guys probably don't know the name Toby Sheldon, do you?
No. Nope. Country singer?
No. Much worse
that would have been my first guess.
Toby Sheldon is a 33-year-old man from Los Angeles that decided to drop $100,000 on plastic surgery so he could look like Justin Bieber. $100,000 for a 33-year-old man to to look like a 19-year-old punk. That is disgusting. And I thought to myself, man, these surgeons must have been mortified when this guy came in. And then I remembered that he dropped $100,000. And that is why I'm so happy that I don't live in the U.S., because that place is starting to get messed up. People are trying to change their face to try and look like stars these days, because that's how much we build them up in the media. They don't like who they are, so they change their face with knives and surgery. Remember the movie Face Off? Cool movie. I thought to myself, that would suck. This guy thought, that would be awesome. I would love to do that. It's just creepy. This guy needs to take off.
I almost had to laugh when you said that the surgeons must have been mortified when this guy walked in. Plastic surgeons? I don't think they're mortified about anything. These people feed off of the decay of society.
They're the modern-day ambulance chasers. I gotta say, come on, take off, hoser. To Alabama Crimson Tide fans, this week is the annual Tide Tennessee Volunteers game, and a bunch of Alabama locals decided it would be a great idea this time to go to Tennessee and to face one of their famous beloved rocks on campus by painting it red and white or crimson and white with Roll Tide Roll and Suck It Tennessee and a bunch of other things from this nut job that poisoned the trees in Auburn. And now this, people, you got to get a life. It's only sports. And as our thing says, it's nothing personal. It's just sports. Guys, enough already with this nonsense. It means something to somebody else. Respect that. Try to respect your fellow man. Get a life and take off, you hillbilly hosers.
Did you call them locals or yokels?
Both. I don't know.
Because I always picture Alabama as a Alabama Crimson Tide fan as basically Cletus the Slack-Jawed Yokels family in The Simpsons.
Yeah, from The Simpsons. Yeah, that's kind of, and that's how they sound. If you ever listen to H.A. McCarron call signals, that's kind of what it sounds like.
My takeoff hoser goes to somebody who ran in the civil election here in Calgary, Evan Woolley, who actually ended up winning Ward 1 or whatever the hell it was. The ward in the Beltline that had all the flooding damage. I wouldn't have thought much of this leading up to the election, but it was the day after the election, and on the street that I work at, I was walking down the sidewalk, and all of a sudden, spray-painted, stenciled onto the sidewalk, was one of Evan Woolley's campaign sign, flyers, whatever the hell you want to call it. Obviously somebody who had been out campaigning for Evan Woolley and just decided to spray-paint the sidewalk. Joel just talked about defacing something that means something to the Tennessee Volunteers. You know what? The sidewalk may not mean anything in particular to anybody specifically, but vandalism is vandalism. And last time I checked, you weren't allowed to just sort of deface public property in order to campaign. Take off, hoser.
It doesn't have to be on the wall to be graffiti.
Damn. Welcome to Political Corner with Steve Big.
Do you want somebody representing your ward who has no, what's the word I'm looking for? No
respect.
Moral character?
Those are both good. I'll take those.
Accountability.
I mean, come on. Ward, what do they call them? Aldermen?
Yes.
Oh, they're such a joke. Come on. Like they do anything.
Hey, they're still getting paid for public office.
Yeah, of course they are, but they're not doing anything.
Hey, the one guy was trying to get us to be allowed to have chickens in our backyard.
Well, there you go. I guess there is some positive change coming.
Hello?
Yeah, and you know what? If it were the suburbs, I would probably agree with you, but this guy represents the Beltline, and there's quite a bit going on in that neck of the woods. I don't think he gets too many coffee breaks.
Moving on to the positive part of the program, it's time to dole out some of our David Putty high five. I'm going to go first. My David Putty high five goes to coed.com website, who, in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, has come out with an article today of the 60 best natural breasts of 2013. It gave me something to do this afternoon. It was fantastic. Some notables in the field. At number 57, Calgary product Alicia Cuthbert. Fortunately, her taste in men is terrible. Ava Mendez, number 41. She was in training day. We got to see those babies out. Brooklyn Decker.
Yeah, and her giant muff.
Well, that's okay. Hey.
No, it's not okay.
Brooklyn Decker, number 17. Obvious. Some of the greatest boobs of the 90s. Lovely Miss Jennifer Love Hewitt comes in at number 14. One of my all-time favorites, Bar Raffaelli's number 12. Scarlett Joe, number 11. Number 6, Katy Perry. For Greg, number 2, Kate Upton. And number 1, get this. I actually had to Google who she was because I have no idea who she is. Was Emily Ratajkowski. She's appears to be a Victoria's Secret model. And for natural, very, very impressive. The one that was kind of odd for me was number 55, Lindsay Lohan. Didn't she have those things fixed? There we go.
Those are not natural.
Regardless, coed.com for your 60 best natural breasts of 2013 in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You get my David Putty high five.
Not only do you get his David Putty high five, but he gave himself a self high five earlier on today because of your website. So thanks, I guess.
Yeah. When you said it gave me something to do this afternoon, I almost shot myself.
I wasn't doing that, you sick bastards.
Sure.
Sure. Sure you weren't.
No. I'm going to give my David Putty high five to Tim Burton and Michael Keaton, because guess what? They're thinking about doing a Beetlejuice 2.
Oh, God.
I heard that.
It's going to be incredible. You know what? Bringing back old movies and doing a second version may not be the best idea, but if you get Michael Keaton to come back, you know it's going to be good. If they got anybody else to be Beetlejuice, I'd be like, oh, I don't know. But Michael Keaton's coming back to be Beetlejuice. It's just like Dumb and Dumber. They tried to do a sequel without Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. Didn't work. Now they're back doing Dumb and Dumber 2, and I think it's going to be hilarious. And it brings me back to my childhood days, and I'm very happy about it.
Just goes to show you the absurdity of this Ghostbusters 3 talk, even though Bill Murray is apparently not involved.
No, you can't do it without Bill Murray.
Exactly. My David Putty high five is going to Calgary Flames forward Sean Monahan.
Oh, God.
For sticking with the big club. Greg will groan. You know what? I don't care. The guy's got 6 goals. He's been scoring some pretty big ones, too. And you know what? It's been so long since Calgary had a rookie that was actually good enough to stick with the big club that this is a huge victory for the franchise. Congratulations, Sean Monahan. David Putty, high five.
He doesn't look out of place whatsoever.
In fact, he looks good.
Well, he looks like one of the better players on the team.
Absolutely. Mind you, that's not hard.
Yeah.
But
the bar wasn't set super high.
Until next time, this has been the Free For All Sports Podcast. Visit freeforallsports.com or tweet us at FFA Sports.